start that third hour. I am Jim Rome, live in Southern California, broadcasting from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studio. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better prices every day. We're talking college football this hour. I've got time for phone calls, too. Coming up later on, the head coach at BYU, Kalani Sitake. Telephone number is toll-free in the U.S. and in Canada, both 1-800-636-8686. But we start hour number three with a conversation with a football player for Iowa State. He passed for 2,537 yards. He tied the career ISU record for rushing touchdowns by a quarterback with 15, but was moved to linebacker after last season. Iowa State's going to open up against Northern Iowa on September 2nd. We are joined right now by player Joel Lanning. Joel, it's great to have you on. How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you guys?
Great, Joel. Really good to have you on. Listen, you've got an amazing story to me. So to fully set this up, we have to go back to last season. And you were playing quarterback for Iowa State. The season wears on, and then you're sharing time at the position with Jacob Park. So what was that time like for you?
At times it was very frustrating, but, I was named the team captain last year, so I couldn't let that affect me or affect that in front of the team. You know, I had to make it about the team, and, I just did my part. As my role, slowly diminished, I was still trying to be a leader as best I could, but, Jacob's doing great. He's good now, and, just kind of is what it is now, but, I just did what I did for the team, really.
Right, so the coaching staff knows there's an issue. Like head coach Matt Campbell said late in the season, he's watching film and he realized, quote, man, this is not the best situation for our football team. We don't have enough high-end players like Joel. Here's one of the best players on our team, and he's not on the field, end quote. So at that point, he starts thinking about the idea of you playing defense. So what was your reaction when the coach came to you first and said he was thinking about moving you to linebacker?
I really didn't have a reaction. Honestly, I was just kind of like, yeah, I'll do whatever for the team. Last year, right after the season ended, he kind of brought me in his office and we were kind of talking about the situation, what's going to happen. There was talk about me, just being all over on the offensive side of the ball. Running back, H-back, whatever, running quarterback and doing all that. And, we kind of had some situations within the team where, linebacker kind of popped up and he just asked me if I could do it right before football started. I said, yeah, sure, why not? I'll do whatever to help this team, try to be a better team than what it has been. So, that was kind of it. And I never really questioned it or anything like that, So I trust these guys and what they're doing.
Right. But Joel, when was the last time you had played linebacker?
Last time I made a tackle was in eighth grade when I played both ways.
Incredible. All right, so the last time you had made a tackle was eighth grade. Now, I mentioned your stats. So you're not only playing quarterback, but you were playing well. You could have transferred to another school in order to play quarterback. A lot of guys in your situation would have done just that, but you didn't. How come?
I came to Iowa State for a reason. I love to hear. I was, wanting to, change the program around the whole time. When I was sitting down with Coach Campbell, I was straight up with him. I said, I'm not gonna transfer in my fifth year and try to go play quarterback somewhere. I told him, I was like, I would rather quit playing football than, try to go somewhere and reestablish myself with new coaches and everything like that. As these coaches just got here, 2 years ago. And so I was just kind of over the fact of transferring. Transferring was never really an option for me. It was either I was gonna play somewhere here or I was just going to be dumb.
Joel Lanning joining us. So you make the most of the transition. And you just said it yourself, you had not made a tackle since eighth grade. I've seen quarterbacks make the move to wide receiver, maybe tight end, but making the move to linebacker is not common. So what's the transition been like for you?
It's really been pretty smooth. I couldn't ask for better coaches, trying to, get the best out of me every day at it. Honestly, the mental part of it, hasn't been anything different. I had to know quite a bit, because we're, as linebackers, we're set in fronts and, you got to see things and tell and communication and stuff like that as you would as a quarterback. But, the biggest thing was the physicality. I went from only getting hit 12 times a year to every day in practice. Now I have to bring my stuff. That was the biggest deal, but the transition's been pretty smooth. I couldn't have done it without my teammates and coaches.
So what's that like? I'm sure you're still getting used to it, but especially the first couple of weeks, when you're playing quarterback and you're not taking hits every day in practice, And then the first couple of weeks, you're delivering hits on a regular basis. Did it take some time to get used to?
But definitely. I mean, I had to get used to the fact that I had to run up and hit guys that are 300 pounds, you know, guys that have 60 pounds on me, guys that are 5 inches taller than me. You know, I just had to get used to that. And, you know, I mean, the first few weeks in spring ball, when it all really started for me, I was struggling. I was pretty sore. My body was beat up. But after we got a little break, you know, came back after spring break and finished off spring ball pretty well, and I felt confident with everything. You know, I mean, I feel confident now with what I'm doing in camp. You know, it's been a good camp for me so far, and the physicality part's just becoming an everyday thing now.
You talked about the physicality part, but you started by mentioning the mentality. So from a mentality standpoint, you have that, and then there's the vision standpoint, and you touched on that. As a quarterback, you're used to reading the safeties and the DNs, so now you're reading as a linebacker. What's that been like, changing your approach?
Yeah, I mean, the thing about as a quarterback, you know, you're kind of like you read a safety, or like you said, you read a DN, and that kind of tells you everything. Or like if you're reading a safety, you work to the other concept. You know, as a linebacker, you just got to know the coverage. And, like, if I'm supposed to stay inside of the three receiver, you know, you stay inside of him the whole time. Just reroute him and do whatever you can. If I'm supposed to guard the running back, I guard the running back. Like, that's the thing about defenses. You know, you just got to kind of know your job and expect the other 10 players to do their job, too. And that's how you have success.
Now, what about the offense? You know, I was going to say, Joel, sorry to interrupt you. What about the offense? I mean, you mentioned, obviously you could tell I wanted to get to that question. But the offense, there was talk about moving you around on the offensive side of the ball. Is there a scenario where you might still see some time on offense and play both sides?
I think, you know, that's kind of been the plan all along. Ever since he asked me if I wanted to play linebacker last February, he still said that, you know, we're definitely going to do some things with you on offense. You know, we just, like, they don't have any, like, there's no, like, set in stone ideas of what we're doing yet, but, you know, we've been brainstorming some things. You know, I'm sure there's going to be some QB runs and all that stuff, and been running it in camp a little bit here and there. But, I mean, that's just been the plan from the get-go, to use me on offense as well, too.
Yeah, Joel, the thing is, you made this clear that you were a team leader, you were a captain, you were going to do what's best for the team, and you're going to be selfless. You're not going to make it about you. But what's been really interesting is the way the team has responded to this. Campbell said that the way you handled it not only helped get the best players on the field, but it inspired everybody else. Quote, you've seen everyone almost embody his spirit. I think they've rallied around him. It's had a profound effect on our football team. So how would you describe your attitude when it came to that transition? And then what's it mean to hear the coach say that that move in and of itself has impacted everybody else and the way they react?
I mean, it's crazy to think that it's impacted everyone. You know, I just, I'm not like a selfish person at all. You know, I'm trying to do it for the team, and to think that, you know, a little thing that I did was just move the defense and, you know, have a role on the defensive side would affect people like that is crazy. I mean, you know, I've had guys come up and tell me that, you know, they look up to me for what I'm doing and all that. And I appreciate it. You know, I didn't think that it was going to have this big of a impact on people. You know, it's crazy, but, you know, it's definitely fun. You know, coaches are telling me that, you know, I'm bringing the best out of some guys on the defense, you know, making people better. And, you know, that's just what I want to do. I want to make it the best that it possibly can be and make players the best that they can possibly be as well.
So I just said it. You're not going to make it about yourself. And you just said, like, I'm not a selfish guy. I'm going to do what's best for the team. So don't make it about yourself. But in the spring game, you had a pick six. Now, given everything you've gone through, you got to take me through that play. What did that moment feel like?
You know, the offense ran like a crossing route in front of me, and I was just carrying it, and the ball came a little high and tipped off the receiver, and I was right there and snagged it, ran as fast as I could. As you know, I like to be in the end zone with the ball, so, I mean, it was fun. But, I mean, I was just kind of in the right place at the right time. Honestly, at that moment when it happened, I didn't think I was in the right spot. But clearly I was, so, I mean, it was well worth it.
Yeah, one last thought. You mentioned at the time that when that went down, quote, I wasn't offended at all. I'm a team player. I don't need all the whatever, followers on Twitter and all that stuff. I was just trying to play football and have fun playing with my teammates and win games. And you also said during this conversation, Joel, that you were not going to transfer and start over. You just want to do it right where you were. My question then is, where did the attitude come from? Is this just something that's been a part of you all along, or what does that attitude mentality come from?
Yeah, I mean, it's just kind of like the person I am. I mean, when I start something, you know, I want to finish it. I'm not the person that's going to quit and try to move on real quick. You know, I came here for a reason, you know, which coaches believed in me. You know, they wanted me to come here, and, you know, I thought I could make an impact on the team, and I think that's clearly what I'm doing. I don't know, like wrestling in high school, you know, it kind of had an effect on me as well with the mentality and stuff like that. You know, like that's like wrestling in high school was hard. I mean, that's like one of the hardest things I've done is like cutting weight and trying to, you know, perform best you can. And, you know, just taught me to never give up just when situations get hard. I mean, because you're out there one-on-one battles and you're not going to win every time. And, you know, you just got to keep coming back and just don't ever give up just because something gets hard.
You know, you were an excellent wrestler in high school. In fact, how much has that helped you with the transition to linebacker?
I think it helped me most mentally, you know, having the mentality to bring it every day, you know, running up in the trenches, like I said earlier, and, you know, running up in the O-line guys that are, you know, twice my size or whatever, you know, it's not a normal thing to do that. So I think, you know, the mentality of wrestling helped me and just for person.
It's been an amazing story thus far, and far from over. You've got Iowa State going up against Northern Iowa on September 2nd. Joel Lanning, my guest. Joel, great job. Really nice to talk some Iowa State football on the program. Nice to have you on. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Great job, Joel. That's a good story. I mean, he played quarterback, and he played at a high level. As I mentioned in the intro, he tied the career ISU record for rushing touchdowns by a quarterback with 15. And then the head coach, Matt Campbell, comes to him one day and says, hey, look, we got to find a way to get the best players on the field, and we've got two of our best players playing the same position, and we got to find a way to get you on the field. How about you play linebacker? And his response was, all right, hey, you need me to play linebacker? I'll play linebacker. A lot of other quarterbacks who play the game as well as he does would have said, no, I'm not doing that. A lot of other quarterbacks would just decide, I'm a quarterback. I'm not changing. No names mentioned. Tim Tebow. This guy, hey, look, fair or unfair, I mean, that's Tebow. I'm going to play quarterback. I've got a dream. I want to be a quarterback, and I'm not going to change positions. Joel Lanning, I'm sure, had a dream to play quarterback, but his bigger dream was to play at Iowa State. And he said he'd stop playing football before he would go someplace else, start over, because he went there to play football, and they need him to play a different position for him to be on the field, so he said, I'll do it. And it's galvanized the entire team because everybody's looking at this guy and saying, if that guy could be that selfless and make those kind of plays, maybe I can dig deeper. Maybe I can look within. Great story. Much respect. All right, we'll come back. Now we're open until the middle of hour three. In fact, 40 past. Now is your window. Kalani Sitake from BYU joins me at 40 past. So you should call me right now if you want to hit something. 1-800-636-8686.
You're listening to The Jim Rome Show.
Got some quick tweets to get to. At Kid Stupendous Tweets, great interview. We've signed Mr. Lanning to a minor league deal. Sign the Mets. Phil in Missouri on Twitter. The last time I tackled someone, it was an eighth grader. Signed, Uncle Hart. It's not what he said. It's not what he said. He said the last time he made a tackle, it was in eighth grade. He did not say the last time he tackled somebody was in eighth grade, Uncle Hart. I'm not going to reset that story. I'm not going to explain what that means. Such Beer Wow tweets, how does the Browns organization make money? Crap City, crap owners, crap players, jerseys that look like crap. I don't get it. That's not all true. It's not a crap city. This guy, how do the Browns make money? Crap city, crap owners, crap players, jerseys that look like crap. I don't get it. Oak City Austin tweets at Jim Rome. What are those?
What are those?
Signed, Logan in Europe. Logan did not say that to me. He did not go, Dad, what are those?
What are those?
when he saw that 75-year-old woman on the beach trying to slip or trying to sell bathing slip covers. Didn't happen. All right, so listen up. Carly Rae, Snoop Dogg, John Wall, most importantly, 50 Cent. Today is the day y'all exit stage left. Bumped from the ceremonial first pitch highlight reel. Forever a footnote, because last night at Fenway Park, a cancer survivor, a local high school pitcher, good kid, Jordan Leandre, detonated that Mount Rushmore, chiseled his own mug into the rubble for the rest of time. Look, we've seen pitches airmailed and spiked and rolled, but we have never seen one thrown straight into the row of photographers near the on-deck circle and never connected squarely with a photog's junk. And for as visual as you think that might be, the audio tells that story just fine. Listen to Leandre get introduced by the PA announcer at Fenway, and then listen to the reaction from the crowd after he throws out that ceremonial first pitch.
Catching his pitch is the former chairman of the Jimmy Fund, Mike Andrews. All right, Jordan, fire it in there.
Gotta say, I've never seen a photog wear one off the junk during a ceremonial first pitch. And the photog never saw it coming because he had his face buried in a Nikon D90 documenting his own demise. I need to run this back for you because the clip is priceless. Take it from the very top and let's go ahead and break this thing down.
Catching his pitch is the former chairman of the Jimmy Fund, Mike Andrews.
Catching his pitch, Mike Andrews? That photog who caught that ball with his junk wishes Mike Andrews even stood a chance of getting his glove on that ball. Mike Andrews might as well have not shown up. And if not for the PA announcer saying his name, nobody would have known he was even there. But that wasn't even the most ill-fated part of that intro.
Catching his pitch is the former chairman of the Jimmy Fund, Mike Andrews. All right, Jordan, fire it in there.
Fire it in there? On second thought, maybe just walk it in there, Jordan. Like Smalls in the Sandlot. Just walk the ball in. Clearly, and you probably knew this warming up in the bullpen, you did not have your best stuff that night. Even the best had their off days. But the best part might have been, after the crowd gasps in horror, the in-game organist wastes no time in firing up the Wurlitzer in a blatant attempt to turn the page and get everybody to look away and think about something else.
Catching his pitch is the former chairman of the Jimmy Fund, Mike Andrews. All right, Jordan, fire it in there.
The string band down there on the Titanic thinks that that was an obvious musical diversion. Hey, nothing to see here. Just a photog writhing in pain, clutching at the family jewels, wondering why he never wrote a will before that night. Hazards of the job, I guess. Most photogs probably think or don't think about strapping on a cup when they go to snap a few pics of a trivial game of catch from 60 feet away when you're like 60 feet away from the game that's 60 feet away. As for my man, Leandre, he was great. He tweeted afterwards, quote, "To make matters worse, I'm a pitcher." Love this kid. That ought to make that photog feel even better when he reads that scrolling through Twitter, sitting on a bag of frozen peas for the next year. One thing to get drilled by a rapper or an athlete from another sport or the lyrical genius behind Call Me Maybe, but entirely another to get wrecked by a guy who not only plays the game in high school, but the position as well. Now, it is worth reporting or pointing out that the photog tweeted that pitch was a little bit outside. Yeah, but I don't know. There was nothing a little bit outside about his reaction when he got clipped. And I don't really blame him if he wants to rewrite the narrative that the whole world right now thinks that he was neutered or has a pair of black and blue eggs between his legs. I don't know. Bottom line here, Jordan was already a hero. Now he's a legend. And there's officially no pressure on anybody, anywhere to throw a good first pitch ever again, because I think the worst effort of the rest of our lives will never top what we saw last night. the literal standard right now is don't hit anyone in the junk. Pretty sure even 50 Cent can throw a dart in this new ceremonial first pitch strike zone. You're not topping that. You're not going to break that record. That's pretty much it. I mean, it's one thing to get away, have it get away from you a little bit, maybe sail on you, maybe doesn't break. I mean, that ball was barely in the same ballpark before it exploded some guy's junk. That's the definition of viral. And my man's a cancer survivor, and he's got a great sense of humor. Good movement, too. I mean, that's the epitome of, even I don't know where it's going. Great run on that fastball. You see that thing tail in? Hey, Rome, they might have to start a new Jimmy Fund. Sign that Photog's junk. I love that organist. Ah, okay. I wonder if there's somebody standing over his or her shoulder. Quick, play, man, play. Play. Give me some Billy Joel or something. Kalani Sitake is going to join me in 5 minutes. We'll talk some BYU football. That's coming up next. Not done yet? That interview is straight ahead, but first I've got a sports update. Busy Thursday for you. Here is the latest. I got to be honest. I'm flipping around right now, and I'm watching. I stopped on the Little League World Series. It's Mexico v. Venezuela. There's this kid for Venezuela who goes, he looks like he's maybe 4'6", batting ninth and just swinging out his backside. I love this kid. Atta babe. Atta kid. Way to battle. Way to battle. Love it. So I'm watching that. As a reminder, you want to prepare for your summer road trips. Before your travels begin, visit O'Reilly Auto Parts for simple preventative maintenance to ensure a safe journey during summer months ahead. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. Look at that kid. What a great at bat. 0-2 and he works the walk. This kid is maybe 4'4". Love him. Atta kid. Atta babe. Kalani Sitake is going to join me momentarily. Meantime, let's see. Got a couple of tweets at Camaro Guy 12. At least the organist was right on cue after the pitch. That's true. At Rob Groves 1 tweets, thanks for saying that Photog caught that pitch with his junk. I just sprayed a smoothie out my nose and all over my windshield. Stuck nuts in. Good thing Torrey Hunter wasn't standing back there. Hashtag no cup. Bike in Buffalo. Getting hit in the junk is good, but nothing is better than kneeling behind somebody and your other buddy shoves the guy. That's always good. We're going to talk some college football momentarily. I am efforting the head coach at BYU. And I'm going to be there momentarily. In fact, I'm there right now. He is the head football coach at BYU. He is entering his second season as head coach. He led BYU to 9 wins and a win in the Poinsettia Bowl game last season. They open up their year against Portland State. It's coming quickly. It's August 26th. Kalani Sitake is my guest. Kalani, nice to have you back on. How are you?
Thanks for having me on, Jim. I'm excited about that Jungle Karma coming back again for me this year.
Man, you got it. I'm glad to have you back. I hope you get some. Now, before we talk about the coming season, how about a quick thought on last season? You had an extremely successful first season. You won the 9 games. You won your bowl game. What was the first season like for you, and was it what you expected?
Yeah, I mean, it was a lot of fun. I think being in my alma mater, and you know, I grew up a BYU fan, so being the head coach was all a dream come true, and having a Heisman Trophy winner at this school, you know, being our offensive coordinator, you know, it's laying the foundation and getting our identity was the goal in the first year, and I think we did that. It was a lot of brand new stuff. I mean, getting to know the players, getting to know the team, establishing your culture, all that was done, and now going into year 2, we feel a lot more comfortable in year 2, but I think it's good for us to amp it up a little bit more. And and make a little bit more demands and change things up and be creative in how we do things and expect ourselves to grow and get better. So year two, we did a lot of things that are different than year one because we want to get better. And every year, we're going to try to keep demanding more from our team and more from our coaches and our program.
Elias Satake joining us. That was such a good answer because that was going to be my next question. How is year two different than year one? But you already answered it. So when you come to this season, you've got Tanner Mangum coming back at quarterback. He played in 2015 when Taysom Hill was injured. He set school freshman records for passing yardage and TDs. So what kind of expectations do you have for Tanner this year?
Oh, great expectations. He is in a better spot now. I think having the year last year, I was really impressed with him and his role as a teammate. You know, Taysom Hill came back from injury and was a starter, and Tanner was able to be a great teammate and a great support from the sideline. He had the headphones on and listened as Ty Detmer made the calls and coached Taysom up all last year. So he got the privilege of being a coach, somewhat like a student coach, and then also now knowing the offense a year later, and he knows all the nuances of it. And so he's starting to come into his own, and we have a lot of expectations for him. But he has a lot of expectations of himself, and I've been really pleased with him as a leader and taking the role of this team as a head guy, as a quarterback. And I really think he's going to have a great year.
Lonnie, you mentioned Ty Detmer. So what's it like having a local legend, a Heisman Trophy winner, and somebody like that working on your staff? And what kind of an effect does he have on the players?
Oh, he's great. I think he has the, he's the guy that's done it. He won a Heisman. He's played in the NFL for 14 years, so he's already accomplished all that. I think, and you watch him, and he's probably the most humble guy I've ever seen. We've been trying to get him to strike the Heisman pose because he can, but he won't do it, and he's just really humble. And he's the kind of guy that you can sit down and talk about hunting and fishing and all that stuff. But when it comes to football, he's a genius. He's smart, understands the game. Knows how to work with quarterbacks, and I think he's done a great job with him and this offensive staff of establishing our offensive identity and then building off of it. And I think that going into year two, there's a lot more comfort, but I see he works extremely hard to get this offense ready, and he's put a lot of time into these quarterbacks, and so I'm excited to see them roll.
BYU head football coach Kalani Sitake is my guest. Now, with regards to the offense, you have to replace your all-time rushing leader, Jamal Williams. I know it's something that's generated a lot of talk in the media and among fans, but from where I'm sitting, it doesn't seem like you or the other coaches are too worried about that. So how do you go about replacing him?
Well, I think the main thing is you don't give the keys to somebody and just anoint them as the next Jamal Williams, and Jamal Williams is a hard guy to replace. I mean, he's the number one rusher in our history of football here. So it's going to be difficult just to replace him that easy, and you can't just you can't expect these guys to be the next guy right away. What you do is you do it by committee, and you get the team to roll behind a physical offensive line that returns four starters, and then you let the guys buy into their roles. And then as soon as that begins, maybe somebody will come out and be the guy and take the lead. For now, from what we see, we're going to need all these guys to do what Jamal did himself. We're going to need more than just one running back. And fortunately for us, we have great talent and a physical line. That's what we're going to work with right now.
Now, you played for Lavelle Edwards at BYU, and I know he's somebody who made a huge impact on you. He passed away this past December. What kind of memories do you have of him?
Oh, man, that's it's hard for me to talk about Lavelle without getting emotional, but he changed my life and great mentor to me. I love him, and just thankful that his family was able to sacrifice the time that he for him to spend with his players and his team, because it helped benefit for people like me that needed him. And so a guy that was a great teacher, but not just on the football field, in life. And so he is a life mentor to me, and I'll miss him, but I'm proud to say that I am a Lavelle guy, and the stuff that we do in this program is just something that I learned from him. I think that I've had great mentors along the way, and he's the top of them. I've had great family members and things like that, but he's somebody in this profession that has changed my life, and I speak for many, many others that have been through his 29 years as a head coach here at BYU.
There's a story from back in 1994, before you were about to play Hawaii in the season opener, and you were ready for him to come in and deliver this pregame speech and get everybody fired up, start yelling and get the room going. What did he do instead?
Well, he was basically took his keys out and started digging in his ear. He had an itch that he had to relieve. And then he said, let's play full 60 minutes and take care of each other, have fun, and then let's go win. And that was it. And then, The things that I learned the most from him is that this game is definitely not going to be about one player, and as sure as heck won't be about one coach. You know, so I'm happy to just get out of the way and let the boys roll. And I learned from Lavelle that you just let this be the players' team, and you govern it as a coach. And that's what I'm trying to do. Let the guys go crazy. They're the ones that put in all the time. They're the ones that deserve all the attention and all the praise. My job as a head coach is just to help govern them, and as an older guy, help them along the way. And I learned a lot about that with Lavelle. And if it takes a special speech for me to get these guys rolling, then they're probably playing the wrong game. You know, but how can you not get excited about the game of football itself? Just getting out there and putting on the cleats and smelling the grass. I mean, that's just something that's special. And so I've learned that from Lavelle, that to appreciate the game and respect it and have fun, man, because, I mean, you're going to miss it when it's done.
Kalani Sitake, my guest. Now, it's interesting you say that because it's about the players. It's about the guys. They're the ones doing the work. It's not about you. Yet during the offseason, you and your family went to Disneyland, and even though you weren't wearing any BYU gear, people started to recognize you, and they kept coming up to you. And at one point, there was an actual line of people wanting to talk to you, and you took the time to speak to everybody. You know, for somebody who doesn't want to make it about you, it was all about you. And you weren't even repping the university in any way in terms of the colors you were wearing. What was that like, and what did that feel like?
Well, I mean, other than Disneyland is for the kids, you know. I hate waiting in lines, but I had a great experience with them. But it shows the support that we have at BYU and all the fans that follow us and how excited they are about our football program. And so we have support that's out there. I mean, no matter where we play, we'll have fans show up there. But it's also, I mean, I've met a lot of fans that were from other programs too that recognize me, and it shows you how excited people are about college football. You know, I've been around and seen enough people that I'm amazed that a fan that follows, you know, a different school in the SEC recognized me. You know, a lot of us Polynesians look the same with our build and everything, so it could have been one of my cousins, but they recognized me, and it was a cool moment, you know, to just talk ball with people. And so I think the passion of football is in this country, and it's strong, and it's awesome to see, and I'm just happy for the small role that I have in it.
Yes, I want to ask you one more thing. Earlier this offseason, you and your foundation took a group of players and coaches to Harlem, and you put on clinics, and you spoke to young people. How did the idea come about, and what did you want your players to take away from that experience?
Well, our players do a lot of charity work and service work. I think that we're no different than a lot of other programs out there. But we wanted to have something special for our guys so that they can remember. And being out in Harlem, Lavelle Edwards and Patty, his wife, served a service mission out there and helped the football program in Harlem. And so we wanted to keep a lot of his charity work and a lot of the stuff that he's done with the Boys and Girls Club alive and to honor him. And so we went out there and took a big group of our players and our coaches to help do some service work, and not just to be about, you know, come and do a camp, but to try to help influence lives. We actually served with the people in the community. We did projects, service projects, and try to just be there and show them that service brings you happiness. No matter what you're doing, if you're helping others, man, it just uplifts your life. And so we're trying to utilize the platform that we have as a football program to help brighten lives. And then in return, it's changed a lot of our players. And I've seen the way that it's affected them being in Harlem and connecting with the community and the family members there. It's been so awesome. We feel like there's a deep connection in that area and also Southern California that we're able to visit, and just trying to promote help and charity and service with everybody.
Service brings happiness. BYU coming off a 9-win season. They won their bowl game. They open up the year against Portland State. That's on August 26th. Their head coach, Kalani Sitake, my guest. Kalani, great to have you on. Appreciate the visit as always. Good luck. And I hope we can do it again real soon.
Yep, I'll take the jungle karma any day. Thank you very much for giving it to us this year.
My man, you got it. You absolutely have it. Like I always say, Kalani, that I have no say who gets it and who doesn't get it, but I feel pretty safe in assuming you're going to get your share without question. Kalani Sitake, BYU head coach, and he's going to get his karma because it all comes around, and that's a good dude. Yeah, I believe in karma. I believe in jungle karma. I believe in normal karma. It may seem sometimes like bad guys get over, bad people get over, but they don't. Maybe in the short term, but it all comes around. I believe in karma, but more than anything else, I believe in the jungle karma. And he'll have his. Why? Because he showed up. He's a good dude, good coach. Came on the program, did a great interview. Those are the type of people that get good jungle karma. And he had a huge first year. We're not done yet. We're almost done. So let me look at the call screen before I go. I've got Josh in Detroit, and I've got Parody Larry. Isn't that like Russian roulette for the jungle? You know what, Josh? It's time. It really is. You've been on hold about 2 months. It is time. We go to Detroit. Josh in Detroit. Josh, it's a real thing. You're on the air. What's going on, Josh?
Not much, Romy. How you been? Thanks for the vine.
I'm great. How you been, Josh? How you been on hold for the last 2 months? What's going on? How you living?
Well, I know you had a good vacation, and I hope the weather was fine, so I don't mean to bring a huge storm in the jungle with this call. After the NFL season was released, and since I am the pride of the 313, I thought I would check out the Lions. A couple weeks ago, I made a call and said that they would go 2-14. And then after reviewing further, they're going to split the games with the Bears, and they're going to go 1-15. They'll be the same old Lions, the same old organization. And so...
That's not a good call. No.
You don't like that call.
I don't like that call. Not a very good call.
Wow, Josh. You know, earlier in the show... And not even earlier in the show, but for the last 20 years of this show, I said that Cal Ripken call was the worst call ever. Now it's the second worst call ever. Josh, you had 2 months to think about that call. You've been on hold for 2 months. And that's what you do? You totally short-circuited. Hey, Romy, hope you had good weather on your vacation because I'm bringing a storm into the jungle. Pause for reaction, pause for laughter, and then it went downhill from there. Hey, Josh, be glad it's the end of the show, and I don't need to spend an entire segment going back and going over how horrible that call was. I'd rather get to one of the good calls we had today. Alvin, give me at least a part of it.
They're doing it. My faith won't allow me to be anything but a family guy and raise my family in Christ. What is the opposite of that? Well, you're with some escort somewhere in a leather-studded Speedo doing God knows what. I think that, you know, a perfect landing place for him would be Baylor. I mean, let's just go ahead and put the two hypocrites together, and they can profess Christ all they want to and just go to co-ed parties and roofie whoever they want to, and just it'll be a great marriage, and you know, I think that they could also bring in all the evangelical preachers that Trump's used to lay hands on them, and they could bless the football team and football season. Let's just go ahead and get it over with and knock out all those birds with a couple of stones, you know?
Context quickly, he's talking about Hugh Freeze, and it was Edward in Little Rock, but his name's not really Edward, it's John. But he said, I don't want to tell you my name is John because people will think I'm that John, so I'm Edward. Either way, Eddie, Johnny, whoever you are, you win. Kalani Sitake, Joel Lanning, and Delaney Walker were my guests. Have a great day. See you tomorrow. We're out.